series in the book of Matthew, and last week we saw these evidences of Jesus being the Messiah as the one who fed the 5,000 from five loaves of bread and two small fish. He fed 5,000 plus women and children, and so probably 15,000, potentially maybe even up to 20,000 with 12 basketfuls of leftovers as a provision and compassion for the people, but also as evidence that he was indeed the Messiah. Those waiting for the Messiah in that day expected that there would be manna from heaven that would come, and there was Jesus in action saying, "I am he." Matthew records this next account as continuation of proof that Jesus is the Messiah, but also for us today and for those that Matthew was writing to, encouragement that he is bigger than all things. So back in 1996, there was this movie that came out, Twister. Twister was the story of a man and a woman on a quest to collect data that would help to understand tornadoes and their prediction with the whole purpose of saving lives. And so they had developed this whole system together of a container that was in the back of a pickup truck with these little data collection devices, that the goal was to drive the pickup truck in the line of the tornado so that the collection devices would be sucked up and there would be readings back to computers and there would be understanding, greater understanding of tornadoes and how to predict them so that people would be able to get out of their way in the future. There were lots of setbacks, lots of challenges. There were competitions from others, other groups trying to do the very same thing. So it was trying to get ahead of others in this data collection idea. And as it always works out, in the end, in Hollywood, it got sucked up and they got all kinds of the data that they were looking for. And the heroes walked away at the end of the movie. They chased storms. And it was such a successful movie that because Hollywood doesn't really come up with new ideas all the time, there's this one coming out. It's the reboot. It seems like very much the same storyline, just in new fashion. So get ready, July of 2024. If you didn't see it in 1996, you get the updated version here in 2024. Storm chasing. For most of us, storm chasing is probably pretty low on our list of things that we are going to do over the weekend. You and I probably are preferring to avoid, not chase them. And especially we see in the news all of these destructive storms recently all around the country. The last thing that many of us would ever want to do is go chase after the thing. We're trying to get out of the way of the thing. But even if we are not ones that are storm chasers, storms often have a way of chasing us, don't they? And when I say that, I'm not talking about those storms in the atmosphere, the atmospheric kind, but the storms of life that rock our lives. Whether they be financial difficulty due to a layoff, or whether it's an illness that comes to us, whether it's a challenge with a child, or whether it's the passing of a loved one. And that's not to mention the storms of the world that we are enduring with wars and rumors of wars and diseases and pandemics and financial crisis on the global side. Storms of life always are going to find their way to us. And when they do, they have a way of bringing fear to our hearts. They have a way of bringing an uneasiness to us. First century believers that Matthew would have been writing to were in the midst of all kinds of storms that were coming to them because of following Jesus. And so it was not an easy time. And so Matthew, in writing his gospel, is helping them to understand who Jesus was, but also who he was to them at that moment. And it helps us 2,000 years later almost understand who Jesus is to us today, in the midst of the storms that will come to us if they aren't already here. And understanding this will help us to have both hope and peace because we see that Jesus is the one who is able to care for us in the midst of the storm. So it's important for us to do two things. The first is to observe Jesus in the storm. There are sermon notes in your bulletin with just two fill-ins, but then there'll be extras for you if you're a note taker. But we need to observe Jesus in the storm, what he did in the midst of that physical storm, and what we can learn about how he cares for us. So here is what Jesus was up to in the midst of the storm. First, we see that Jesus prays for us. He prays for you. Verse 22, it's interesting that Matthew says, immediately after the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of them to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. That word made is like a compelling. It's like a young child who does not want to do what they want to do, and the parent compels, even if it is sticking them in the boat. Jesus almost, you almost have this visual picture of like, come on, guys, get in there, get in there. They didn't want to get in the boat. They wanted to hang out where the miracle just happened. They wanted to be where there was not just provision for the moment, but there were leftovers. They were in the midst of seeing Jesus do an incredible miracle. Why in the world would you ever want to leave that place? And yet Jesus knows that it's time for the next thing. It's time for the next place, and it's time for them to face the next challenge. And so even though they don't want to, and this is where storms often come, we don't want to get in the boat. We don't want to have to go across the lake. We want to stay right where we are at, don't we? But Jesus knows that it's time to go to the next place, whether we want to go there or not. And so he puts them in the boat. He makes them, compels them to get in the boat and to go to the other side of the lake, which is really the Sea of Galilee. We'll look at that in a moment. As they get in the boat and start on their way rowing to the other side, what does Jesus do? Verse 23, after he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. He prays. Commentators will often say that most likely he was doing it for a couple reasons. He was there praying, recovering from all in his humanness that was expelled. Jesus was fully God and fully man. All that he did was under the leading and the power of the Holy Spirit. And so in his humanness, he was wiped out. He was depleted. He had just poured out power by the Holy Spirit to do this as the Father multiplies all this. So there is some recovery in prayer. But commentators also believe that Jesus was praying for them. As he put them in the boat to head on the other side, he was praying for them. Knowing that the storm was coming, Jesus prayed. Friends, today, Jesus prays for you. Do you know that? The scriptures say that one of his ministries today, as he is seated at the right hand of the Father in heaven, is he intercedes for us before the Father. Just as Jesus was praying for them, he's praying for us today. Jesus prays for you. Whether the storm is yet to come or whether we are in the midst of the storm, Jesus prays for you. Observing Jesus in the storm, we also see that Jesus knows exactly where you are at. Jesus knows where you're at. Verse 25, the boat was already, verse 24 and 25, The boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. And during the fourth watch of the night, Jesus comes. The disciples in the NIV say they were a considerable distance. The original language and some translations may say many stadia. Now, let's unpack this for a moment to understand it, because a stadia is about 606 feet. 606 feet for many stadia. They are on the Sea of Galilee, which from north to south was about 13 miles, and side to side is about 7 miles. And so from understanding where they went, where they were at to where they're going across on the width part of the Sea of Galilee. They're on the 7 mile part. And so they are out there, many stadia. You're trying to understand what is many. Many means a lot. If you look it up in the dictionary, many means a lot. Now, that doesn't help us much at all. But let's say that that many is going to be at least 10. So if we have 10 stadia, we're at like 6,000 plus feet. They are well over a mile across. And we are told it is in the fourth watch of the night, which is the part of the night from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. So it is dark. The winds are blowing. The waves are crashing. Here's the point. Jesus knows where they are at, even though it is humanly impossible for anyone to be able to see them. To look out in the middle of the night, at least a mile out, with waves up and down, there's no lights out there. This is impossible for a human being to know and to see where they are at. But Jesus knows where they are at. Because in a moment, we'll see, he comes out to them. He knows where they're at. Friends, in the face of the storm, you may feel lost. Certainly, they were blown all over the place. They probably had no idea where they were at. As they're struggling across those waves, and the wind is going to steer them in directions that they don't want to go as they fight against it. Not only do they not know where they're at, but at the same time, Jesus knows where they are. Even if you feel lost in the midst of the storm, Jesus knows exactly where you are. Find comfort in that. And because he knows where you are, we observe that Jesus then comes out to us. Jesus comes out to us. In verse 25, during the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. He knows where they are, and he comes out to them, not in a boat, but he comes out walking on the water. Now, if you've been in church, like I grew up in church from the day that I was born, I feel like I was in church. There, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, it was like my second home. Our family was usually the last ones to leave. Many times the pastor had left and we were the ones that locked up the church. That was just the way. It was like church was the second home. Church was the second home. And so when I hear this story of Jesus walking on water, I go, yeah, Jesus walked on water. But can we just pause for a second? Maybe if you are newer to church or you're newer to reading the Bible, or you're newer to following Jesus, you're going, whoa, time out. Jesus is walking on water. Yes. Jesus walked on the water. He did what was metaphysically impossible. I don't know, when was the last time that any of you tried to walk on water? I know anytime I go to the swimming pool, I go down, and I go down immediately. There has never been a time that I have ever even begun to come close to walking on water, and I highly doubt that there's anyone here who has ever been close to doing it too. But yet, the way that Jesus comes is he comes walking on the water. He knows where they're at, in the midst of the waves and the wind, and he walks to them. It's his mode of coming out to them. He doesn't wait for them to decide, let's go find Jesus, we're not getting anywhere, let's turn around and go find him. Let's not just sit here. He, in the midst of their struggle, Jesus comes out to them. Sometimes we think that we are the ones that are seeking after God. Like, he's the elusive one and we're running all over the place after him. He invites us to seek him. But usually when he says it, he says, seek me while I may be found. In other words, he has come to us. We sang this morning, Jesus is in this room. We believe that. We believe that he, by his Spirit, is in this room. He has come to us. Friends, Jesus, in the midst of the storm, comes to you. He's the one that pursues you. He's the one that comes out to you. Isn't that comforting? To know that he comes to you. When he comes, we observe that Jesus calms you. Verse 27 talks about this, but in verse 26, as if the rowing wasn't hard enough and the frustration and the wind and the waves were not enough to make you upset, they see Jesus and they think, it's a ghost. It's a ghost is what they think. They think it's some sort of spiritual body that is making its way out across the wind and the waves, walking on water, because that's not what human beings do. This has to be some sort of spiritual, supernatural entity that's coming out. So imagine you're already kind of freaked out because the wind and the waves and everything is so hard pressing against you. Things are bad. This is like one of those going from bad to worse. Because now not only are you stuck in the middle of the Sea of Galilee fighting against the wind and the waves, but now there is a supernatural being out there with you that would freak anybody out. And they are terrified, the scriptures say. They are filled with fear. Sometimes in the midst of the storm, it feels like things, instead of getting better, get worse. But Jesus, in the midst of all of that, in verse 27, speaks to them. It says, Jesus immediately said to them, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. As he comes out to them, he speaks to them those words that calm them. In the midst of the storm, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Friends, Jesus calms us in the storm, and the way that he does it most regularly is by speaking to us. He speaks to us through his word. He speaks words of calm and reassurance and encouragement in his presence. He speaks to us by the whispers of the Spirit. I am here. He speaks to us maybe through a prophetic word from another person or a word of encouragement from another believer. He speaks in many different ways. He speaks to bring calm. This shows us the importance of, in the peaceful times, but especially in the stormy times, of being in the Word of God. We need to hear what he is saying, and we hear what he is saying as we read and allow him to speak to us through the scriptures. It shows us the importance of being in prayer in the storms. Even if it is chaotic and crazy, even if it feels from bad to worse, it puts us in a reminding place that we are to be people who are in prayer, because in prayer we will often hear the whispers of the Spirit. And it shows us the importance, especially when we are in the midst of the storm, of being in relationships with other people, so that words of encouragement, so that the prophetic can happen, so that those I am here with you opportunities take place. Jesus speaks through his word, through the Spirit, through others. And so drawing near to others and drawing near to him through his word and prayer is critical in the storms. Jesus calms, and he does it as he speaks. I kind of envision it as a parent with their child who, in the midst of a really frightening situation, in a period where they just feel like the world is out of control, where they are sad or disappointed about something, and the parent comes and holds them. The parent comes to them and holds them, but usually also is there to whisper in their ear, I'm here. I love you. It's okay. You don't have to be afraid. It's gonna be all right. Like a father or a mother gently holding their child who's terrified or hysterical because of what has just happened. I'm here. I'm here. And as the words of reassurance wash over that child, slowly they begin to calm down. Jesus comes out to us. And when he comes out to us, he speaks to us through the word and by his Spirit and through other believers. We observe in the storm that Jesus also rescues you. Verse 32, Jesus climbs into the boat with Peter. We'll look at that in a moment. And the wind dies down, it says, verse 32. When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. The storm, the difficulty, the challenge is over. Jesus had rescued them. Friends, Jesus rescues us in the midst of the storm, but it may not always be when we think the rescue should come. Imagine, it was daytime, or at least evening. Evening had come when they went out on the boat. So they are rowing for at least probably from 7 or 8 o'clock at night in the evening until at least 3 in the morning. So think about that. They're out in the storm for 7 hours. Row, row. With every passing moment, the anxiety has to be building. The fear has to be building. All of it. Where was Jesus at during all that time? Praying for them, knowing where they were at, until it was time to come out to them. Friends, the storms of life sometimes are a while. And it's when they have become the longest that we start to wonder. But we hold on in faith, knowing that he is the one who comes to us, and he is the one who rescues us. These are things we need to observe about Jesus. But in it all, I would add this one thing. In all of it, Jesus is so calm. In Mark chapter 6, in Mark's account of this story, Mark 6:48, it says that Jesus was about to pass by them when they saw him and called out to him. So just put that in context. Jesus has prayed for them. He knows where they're at. He's walking by them. If they hadn't seen him, what was he going to do? He was about to just keep on going. I'll meet you guys there. That's in the midst of it all. For them, that could not have been funny. But for me, that is kind of funny. That he is just so calm and cool and collected, walking on water in the midst of the waves and the wind. He was just going to walk right by, unless they saw him. Jesus is not freaked out by the storm. When you think of the twisters, in 1985, I lived through this F5 tornado that just destroyed this long line of things in late May of 1985. It was one of those historic tornadoes. I'll tell you, in our 3/4 of land that my parents have, there were 65 trees that were just demolished, and everything on the other end of the road that was not as wooded, all those houses were completely leveled. These things that you see on TV now of these towns just having all of this destruction, that kind of storm went right through when I was 7 years old. For a while after that, whenever there was dark clouds, I was not calm. I was doing everything I could to figure out, is there another one of these things coming? Because that was a traumatic thing. I was not calm. But Jesus, as powerful as that was, Jesus was calm. Why can he be calm? Why can he not be stressed out? Why can he not be worried? Because he's bigger than the storm. If he knows that with just a word, he can stop it, there's no reason for him to be stressed out. Because it obeys him, he's calm. Friends, no matter what the storm is, we can know that we have one who is calm with us. So what do we do? Because most of the time, we're not calm. What do we do in the midst of the storm? Here's a few lessons, and then we'll wrap up and take communion together. The first, as we would respond to Jesus, the first is this: acknowledge our fear. Acknowledge our fear. Verse 26, when the disciples saw Jesus walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. See, they didn't hide it. They cried out in it. They cried out in fear. Friends, it is human to be afraid. Sometimes, especially in the church, because the scriptures say, do not be afraid, fear not. So often what we take from that message is, I cannot let anybody know I'm afraid because that means that I don't have it all together, I'm not that good of a Christian. Well, Jesus and the scriptures tell us, do not be afraid. It is the most said command in all of scripture, do not be afraid. Why? Because he knows. He knows how prone we are to be afraid. And friends, the worst thing that we can do is try to mask it or hide it or man up or do whatever it is to make the world think, I'm not afraid, I got this. And meanwhile, inside we are terrified. We don't know how in the world this is all going to work out. But Jesus invites us, God the Father invites us, to acknowledge and to admit that I am afraid. Because the moment that we can admit it, that's when he begins to work in us. He is able to work when we admit it. Responding to Jesus in the storm, we first acknowledge fear. Then secondly, we're going to have to probably take some step out in faith. Verses 28 and 29, I said we'd come back to this. After Jesus says, take courage, it's I, do not be afraid. In verse 27, Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And Jesus says, come. And Peter gets down out of the boat, and he walks on the water, and he came toward Jesus. Isn't that incredible? In the midst of the wind and the waves of this storm, Peter says, Jesus, if it's you, call me out. Come to me. And Jesus says, come. And he goes. That's a pretty incredible step of faith. The other 11 guys, they're in the boat. They haven't got out. And sometimes we forget about this part, that Peter got out because of what happens next. Because what happens next is Peter, in the midst of walking on the water, all of a sudden realizes, oh, I'm walking on water, and oh, there's wind and waves all around, and he begins to look around and begins to sink. We focus so much on, oh, Peter didn't have faith. He sunk because he took his faith and his eyes off of Jesus. I think for a moment, we just got to acknowledge he had more faith than I probably would have in that situation. And probably for a lot of us, we would find ourselves in the boat in the midst of it. Peter had, even if it wasn't a lot, Peter had a little bit of faith. Enough to step out of the boat. And other than Jesus, maybe the only human being in history to walk on water. Friends, it's going to be necessary to exercise our faith in the midst of the storm. When he comes out to us, as we acknowledge our fear, there's going to be some step of faith that we are going to have to take. When he speaks, we're going to have faith to act. If it seems like it's hopeless, we're going to have faith to believe that he is going to still do something. If it seems like he's never coming and where is he, to have faith to believe that he still knows where I'm at and he is on his way. If there's a risk that's going to be needed to take to step out of this, to step out in faith and to take it. There is going to be some action that we are going to have to step out in faith. And when we do, just as Peter found out, we're going to have to trust his rescue. Because in verses 32 to 32, as he comes out, he sees the wind, he's afraid, he begins to sink, he cries out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" Peter does well until he doesn't, until he shifts his focus from Jesus to the storm. But when his faith is imperfect, notice what he does. He cries out to Jesus, "Rescue me. Save me." Friends, there's going to be times in the storm where you take steps out, where you step out in faith, where you obey, where you listen to the word of the Lord and you do what he says. And in the midst of it, it's going to get hairy. It's going to get fearful. It's going to get scary, and you're going to lose your faith. Rather than, I give up, beat myself up, I'm a failure, I can't believe I didn't do it well, we do what Peter does. "Lord, I've stepped out, but Lord, I've lost my nerve. Lord, save me now." See, even that little bit of faith Jesus works with. And even in it, he is able to rescue us. Even from beginning to end, it's the same cry, "Lord, save us. Lord, save me." Last response. And that is to worship him for who he is. Verse 33, as Jesus saves Peter, pulls him, they climb into the boat, and verse 33 says, "Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" See, their worship was motivated by what he did. But what it was really focused on was who he was. Don't miss this as we wrap up. They declared, "Truly, you are the Son of God." It was a declaration of who he was. But why did they worship first? They worshiped because of what he did. Now, friends, we're going to have those times where we thank him and then worship him. But what is needed in the storms is to worship him before he does the rescue. Worship him not because he has saved us, though we do worship him because he has saved us. But we worship him first and foremost because of who he is. And that's going to be really important, because in the midst of the storm, in the midst of the time when he's still out praying for us, when he's still alone and we are out on the midst of the boat on the lake, when things are wild and crazy, and he hasn't come to us yet, he hasn't rescued us yet, if we are waiting to worship him, we're in trouble. We worship him not because of what he does, we worship him primarily because of who he is. He is the Son of God. Because if not, if we only worship him when he does what we think he needs to do for us, when he rescues us, if that's the only time we worship, we have missed who he is. We worship him for who he is as we wait upon him for his rescue of what he does. And then we worship him even more. As much as we learn these lessons and see what Jesus does and how he is here to care for us in the midst of the storm, the big picture of this is not this is how Jesus helps us, though it is. The big picture is he is the one who is the Son of God, who the wind and the waves obey him just because he's there. That's who he is. That's who he is. And that is why we worship. That is why we worship.